you, Amy, for joining us. I think many of you have now already met Dr. Amy Abernathy, but just a little bit of background. Dr. Abernathy is an oncologist and internationally recognized clinical data expert and clinical researcher. She currently serves as FDA's Principal Deputy Commissioner of Food and Drugs and the agency's acting CIO. Prior to FDA, she had multiple executive roles at Flatiron Health and was professor of medicine at Duke University School of Medicine. So thank you so much, Amy, for joining us. I wanted to ask you first off about what's on everybody's mind right now, which is, of course, COVID and particularly COVID vaccines. As you think about COVID vaccines and real-time real-world data, how do you see real-world data playing into safety surveillance of an approved vaccine? Building on the discussion that happened at the VRBPAC meeting last week and was discussed in the paper a little bit, can we use RWE to ensure or even boost public confidence upon vaccine availability?
So important question, Jeremy. And within the US context, we think about vaccines either having full approval as a BLA approval or are being authorized under emergency use authorization. And within both of those contexts, there's a number of important ways that there's going to need to be post-authorization or approval follow-up. And real-world data, I anticipate, is going to have a very important part to play here. So this includes monitoring post-authorization or approval for safety signals. And I think that makes sense to all of us. And 2 months of data as a part of the initial application is going to be important to make sure that we have time to see safety signals during the period of time we expect the most, but that still does not really reflect the full period, either for patients who are on trial or patients who are receiving vaccines in the usual care setting. There's also a question around comparative effectiveness. So how do we think about these vaccines compared to each other, as well as within the context of individual unique populations? So not just the older or the younger patient, but people who have different comorbidities. So for example, immunologic comorbidities, neurologic comorbidities, the diabetic patient, et cetera. So all of these are going to be stories that are going to need to play out in the post-authorization or approval setting and really are largely going to be told through real world data. The other two things I'd mention, one is there's going to be the need not only for traditional claims data sets to help follow patients longitudinally, but electronic health record data to provide the rich understanding of, for example, the person who has neurologic sequela, what does that really mean? Mm-hmm. And to be able to compare differences in signals between patient populations. And then also one of the conversations that's been happening, and you've seen this creep up in a number of places, is the important work on coming up with consistent mechanisms to code the vaccines and be able to have confidence of who receives what. And that's also a very active area that's being worked on right now.
Really interesting. And speaking of data and EHR data, we've talked a lot about data and what data is fit for purpose, especially around COVID. And we entered into a research collaboration agreement with FDA in April to assess safety and effectiveness of COVID-19 treatments, also looking at diagnostics. I know we've talked a lot about data. Maybe I'll suggest that one. But why was partnering with us important? And how would you characterize what we've learned to date and what we'll continue to learn, and how we can apply that in the future as well, potentially?
So FDA has a mechanism to develop research collaborative agreements, and certainly that's been the mechanism we've employed for this partnership with Aidion. Importantly, as a part of this mechanism, as you know, Jeremy, we have the ability to partner with Aidion through the research collaboration, but then also bring in a number of data partners through this collaboration that now can really be the data sets used as we explore a number of critical research questions. And the research collaborative agreement is important for a number of reasons. First of all, it provides a mechanism that together we can understand the development of the methods. We can, you know, bring essentially meeting the scientific minds together and do that methods and analytic development, as well as start to explore critical questions as it relates to different data sets. Why is that important? Well, certainly the Aideon team has the capability to do important methods development, FDA does, and many teams around the country, but this particular collaboration allows us to do it quickly. We've put in place essentially like a tech sprint model where we meet every week, and that is a really important way to quickly develop methods in the context of COVID-19. It allows us to really build regulatory familiarity and start to understand inside of FDA some of the critical issues that we need to think about with COVID-19 analyses and these kinds of data sets. And so that's an important aspect, both from the FDA side, as well as from the Aideon and other collaborator side. And then also it gives us the chance to identify and prioritize research questions that are going to be critical to answer now, and helps us figure out what use cases are going to be viable right now and which ones might we need to wait in towards the future. Mm-hmm. So I see this kind of critical need of building sort of transparent familiarity as a huge part of the research collaboration.
That makes a lot of sense. And you know, as we move post-pandemic, you know, I've heard you speak about what we've learned about RWE during this pandemic period to apply RWE when this is hopefully very soon behind us. Can you share any thoughts, specific examples about how this increased use of RWE might manifest beyond this pandemic era?
So the first one kind of follows from what I was just saying, which is this rapid acceleration of regulatory familiarity. Mm-hmm. And it has helped us as the agency start to understand data sets fit for purpose, analyses fit for purpose, and analytic approaches, as well as the variety of use cases, and actually develop a common vernacular or lingua franca more so for this. So I see that that's going to persist post-pandemic. The second one that I think is going to persist post-pandemic is likely the biggest aha that's happened in my mind in the context of COVID. Historically, we've talked about real world evidence as if it was a small group of research methods and types of questions that could be answered, and therefore mm-hmm. a very narrow sort of thinking about what real world data sets could be, how we could task the real world data to answer questions. And the biggest post-pandemic kind of follow-up element that's going to be changed, I think, is this broad widening of our thinking about how real world data can answer many types of questions, not just sort of the original narrow set of mm-hmm. can we use this as a comparator arm, for example. And you know, now what we're seeing at FDA is thinking about how can we use real world data to better manage drug shortages in the medical product supply mm-hmm. chain? How can we think about real world data to understand clinical context, such as natural history of disease? How can we use real world data in near real time to help us as regulators provide solid advice for people who are planning clinical trials or mm-hmm. sort of thinking about specific indications for medical products? So there's a huge number of new ways that we can think about putting data to task. And I think that is a big change that's going to likely persist post-pandemic in addition to the other kinds of lessons learned. The last thing I would say is that there has been a reckoning with respect to respect for the need for the development of scientific methods. You know this, your colleagues know this, but there was sort of had been become this sort of drumbeat of course we know how to do this. And COVID-19 has reminded all of us that the development of the science, development of transparent methods mm-hmm. is critical, and it has to be something that we develop standards around, and that's going to be something that's going to be important to persist past post-pandemic.
Interesting. So speaking of you know, sponsors working with the agency, thinking about using RWE, as we're in the pandemic, moving post-pandemic, do you have any advice on how and when sponsors should engage FDA to integrate real-world data into their conversations, into their submissions? It's something that we are asked a lot. So I thought I would put it.
Sure you are. So, you know, practically speaking, let me sort of divide this from the drug biologic context versus the device context, because I think that it's different in both of those settings. In the drug and biologics context, certainly real world data to set the stage is very important. Real world data to inform the development of clinical trials is very important. And so those elements are, I think, well understood and going to be important parts of applications. And think about what I just said a second ago, recognizing this sort of wide set of responsibilities of real world data to sort of tell the story. Also, you know, if you're thinking about incorporating real world data studies into your portfolio on the drug and biologic side, as CDER and CBER start to move forward with really advancing their thinking in data fit for purpose analysis, fit for purpose and use cases, I advise industry to plan early to have the conversations with regulators as they're developing their development plans. And the CDRH side, you know, CDRH, our devices center, and so in the device context, there's been really a total product lifecycle approach and thinking about real world data. And they, you know, in the device setting, there's a place for real world data and real world data based studies, including for comparator arms, for label expansions, and also for subsequent device updates. There's certainly a role for post-marketing evaluation and safety surveillance. So really across that total product lifecycle, real-world data studies. And what's interesting there is sort of a growing book of examples in the device space that I think can be drawn upon to look at. And again, like the drug and biologic side, the device side also is very interested in hearing from industry sponsors early and helping to shape those real world data study plans.
You know, continuing the thread, Amy, you know, we understand that FDA is looking to partner with industry on pilots related to real world data, real world evidence. I think you may be building off of what you were just saying. Are there areas in particular that you think these pilots would be most helpful? I can infer a little bit, but are there any areas that you have in mind?
Yeah, you know, so first of all, let me kind of hit on, there's a number of different project types that can take place. So we've talked about the research collaborative agreement. There are a variety of studies that can be done in the academic setting, and including those where FDA is partnered or sort of has, a close relationship to the study and can learn more directly from it or even provide voice to the study. So I encourage everyone to explore those different types of projects and partnerships. I think that we have a critical responsibility of looking across the landscape of real world data studies and really pressure testing them all, including the development of the methods and also understanding within what data contexts as well as what therapeutic contexts different study types work. You know, you mentioned early on, Jeremy, that I'm an oncologist, right? So certain study types are going to work well in oncology, but may not be transferable to the diabetes or congestive heart failure settings. And so making sure that there are projects that explore study types and methods, but also explore this by therapeutic area and data set types are going to be very, very important. And doing that in a way that builds upon the book of work and the overall science. So sort of identifying gaps and filling in those gaps is also going to be very, very important.
And I'm just thinking about the question that Nicole posted to the chat here. So in other cases, Nicole gave the example of cardiovascular disease where there's unmet need and, in principle, a trial could be run, but that's, you know, kind of a long-term endeavor, but the unmet need is immediate. Do you think there's appetite for use of RWE in those cases where we can, demonstrate comparative effectiveness, comparative safety using RWE rather than an RCT potentially?
I think it's by therapeutic area, and really, this is one of those areas where I would definitely talk to the review teams at FDA as you're contemplating those study types. The question becomes with what risk? So what decision needs to be made and with what risk, and how might a real world data study that may or may not be able to provide a compelling and confident answer potentially amplify the risk or otherwise help take better care of patients. And so I highly recommend you talk to the review team teams early. You know, Nicole's question was specifically around cardiovascular disease. And my point before is that cardiovascular disease does look different than cancer. So our ability to have confidence in study populations and as well as in the meaning of clinical outcomes is different by therapeutic area. And that's one of the things that's going to be important to take into account.
This is Shin's question. Do you have any thoughts on external control arms in cardiovascular indications?
So the truth is, Shin, I don't really know the data for external control arms and cardiovascular indications. So let me just give you a couple of observations from having done this a lot in my oncology side. So first of all, the hat I am now putting on is that of a person who's been working in this space for a long time, not specifically as a regulator. And one of the observations that I had within the context of trying to develop external control arms is that not only is there the need to develop standardized methods. So how do you align the real world data set with the study population in terms of eligibility criteria, and which those eligibility criteria really matter? How do you ultimately appropriately weight and match the study populations? And then what do you do with the results, especially with your confidence in study outcomes? These were things that we studied at length in the oncology setting. And one of the things that I learned a number of things. One of the things I learned was that the eligibility criteria that you think matter are not necessarily the ones that really do matter. And so there was a lot of important work to figure out what is the best way to align the populations. I also learned that there are times when it's very easy to align the populations, such as biomarker restriction for specific biomarkers in lung cancer, like patients who are ALK positive versus ALK negative. But then there are other times when it's very hard to get aligned populations. And then I also learned the criticality of making sure that we had outcome measures that we understood, right? Those are kind of key features. Now, transferring that to the cardiovascular setting, I think we have a lot of work to do that same kind of alignment and cross-checking on the methods development side to be able to understand how real-world competitors are going to work. And I forgot to say, Jeremy, before I leave this topic, I learned one other thing in the oncology setting that is really important, I think, for cardiovascular disease. And that's that the temporality of the data set matters a lot as well, right? Yeah. The background care is changing. Yeah. And if you're pulling your real world data set from 2005, it does not reflect 2020 yeah. care. Being able to align your data set for when the clinical trial is being run is another key task.
And Stephen's question here, I presume, in those parameters that we're thinking about, effect size figures in there as well, consideration of effect size?
Yes. Consideration of effect size, and it goes back to this issue around the study population and the interventions that you're thinking about.
Let's finish with a question from Brian. The FDA has been leading in this area, and Brian, I presume you mean real-world data, real-world evidence, and Sentinel. Now we see regulators across the globe evolving their thinking. Do you see harmonization of RWE standards emerging by global regulators? And let me add a coda to that, which is, has COVID-19 kind of spurred any global harmonization as a result?
So Amy as a real world data person, hopes to see harmonization globally. I think we've got a lot of work to do. I mean, if we're just sitting here talking about kind of getting the methods right and ways of understanding these data sets, you can imagine that there's going to be a lot of work to do in terms of international harmonization. So I would suggest that we watch this space and watch how it progresses, but that there is great opportunity through harmonization.